My apologies for letting it slip past 5 o'clock here. So we have a study session, and we are all here except Councilmember Olson told me he would not be here for the hour. So, Yuri Burnett, this is Transportation 201 for Dummies.
Yep, yep.
And I'm probably the biggest dummy, so I appreciate this.
We'll see. So the way that we wanted to do this was have this presentation that talks more about the kind of academic element of it, and then during the regular session, Kevin is going to present and sort of apply it to real-world Ferndale. So I'm not really going to be talking too much about the project so much as why we do projects, and then Kevin's going to be talking more about the who, what, when, where, and how of those projects. And again, this is probably about a 20-minute presentation, so think of your questions, and then I'll be happy to attempt to answer them. More than likely, Kevin's going to be able to answer some of them during the regular session, too.
I'm assuming he's the show stuff at 5:25.
Wait, what?
He said 5:25.
I'll be done by 5:25. So this is primarily looking at the whys. Remember when you're switching it to point at the thing, not the computer.
Where's your
PowerPoint? Oh, sorry.
Roman, don't do it.
I guess. So the who's, who, city crew or a city contractor, the county in some cases, the state in some cases, maybe a private developer builds our roads. The what, again, is going to be part two of the presentation. Really, this concentrates on the whys. Again, part two, the whens, the wheres, and the hows, where the how, again, is part of the six-year traffic improvement or transportation improvement program in combination with the 20-year plan. We talked about that a little bit last time. So why do we build? The projects are broken into four main categories: capacity improvements, safety, road standards and preservation, which is basically maintenance, and area circulation. Each project might have multiple of these, where it might be capacity and safety, it might be safety and road standard improvements, but they should have one of these. So starting off, why don't we build power? Just because you're on council, just because we're on staff, doesn't mean this is the opportunity to put a stop sign on either side of your driveway so that you can get out in the morning.
Well, we run.
Right. Well, so while none of you would ever do something like this, it does happen. And it happens where you might not even realize it, where as you were talking to people, there was this project that everyone kept on bringing up. And now that you're elected, it should be number one on the priority list. There are ways to make that happen, but just because you now have the power doesn't mean that each project that's the most popular rises to the top. Also, why don't we build? This is something you might see on late night TV, which is apparently an automatic egg cracker.
Yeah.
So we don't build just because we can get grants for things. Grants aren't supposed to be what drives what our projects are. Grants are a tool where we can build the projects that we want to build. So similar to the late night TV, just because it's cheaper doesn't mean we need it. So grants are supposed to be something that help us out. They are not supposed to be something where we say, what grants are available, now let us bend and twist to be able to accommodate the grant. There's some of that in what we do, but it's not the driving force. So why do we build? First of all, capacity improvements, where a capacity improvement adds quantity to the network. So here in this example, it's adding an additional lane, which is the most obvious way that you build quantity in. There are other things that might be a capacity improvement, where it's more lanes, a greater volume of vehicles, a whole new road, maybe a larger and more efficient intersection. In time, and this is where we see Bellingham and the cities like Seattle and Bellevue, where they're adding light rail or other multimodal into it to add capacity into their network. We're not there yet, but you're going to start to see it probably in the next 20 years where we start talking about, well, we already are, more efficient bus service as an alternative to automobiles, more pedestrian, as Papa John and Mr. Rudolph always say, adding that in as capacity for folks. one of the things that we hear is, if not for growth, no projects would be necessary. That if only we stopped growing, hey, great, we don't need to do anything. But that's not necessarily true. As we're going to talk about, lack of maintenance all of a sudden might start requiring projects, which might be bigger than what they would be if we had only done the maintenance. Changing regulations. All of a sudden, we need to accommodate bicycles? What the heck is this? All of a sudden, our mini lanes on LeBounty Road aren't big enough? All of a sudden, we need to add capacity. Other ones, life safety concerns may require projects where there's a bad intersection or something like that, which, again, we hear of quite often. That might require a project. So it's not just growth that triggers these. There are other things that we've inherited over time, or that because we need to balance this versus that, we end up making a decision that we're going to end up paying more later instead of doing just maintenance today. Another thing we hear, if not for this development, no project would be necessary. So take Main and LeBounty, for example. If we didn't have a big box store potentially going in, we wouldn't need the Main and LeBounty roundabout. That's actually not the case. A big box store coming in means that we're going to need that improvement more rapidly. But as we continue to see development happening, maybe if it's something that you don't notice, at some point in the future, we are going to need to have an improvement at Main and LeBounty. Whether it's a roundabout or not is open-ended, but we will need an improvement at that intersection, because we need to look at the transportation network as a system. It's not just what has the immediate impacts within line of sight or within a stone's throw, because oftentimes, and you'll see, when school is out of session, traffic's very different all throughout Ferndale. And you could put a bag over your head, take you to an intersection, and you don't know what day it is, pull it off, and more than likely we would be able to guess, oh, this is atypical. Maybe the refinery is having a turnaround. Maybe Main Street is blocked off because way down the line there are two semis going into Pilot. So it's part of a system. Maybe a railroad car is blocking the intersection. And again, the impacts of the projects may be felt off-site, a long distance off-site. So as Kevin's going to show you, approximately two-thirds of the projected transportation improvements are growth-related. That in two-thirds of the case, yes, if not for growth, we wouldn't need to do maybe not this project, but not this scope of project, or maybe not right now. What that means, though, is because they are capacity-related, we can charge traffic impact fees against them. Traffic impact fees are only allowed for capacity improvements. So it doesn't mean that if there is a capacity component to a project, 100% of it or the max could be charged for traffic impact fees. It's really variable. Where it might be, as in with Church Road, when we did the improvements, teensy tiny little part of it, because we added a turn pocket, was traffic impact fee eligible. So that's something that we track over time, is a maximum of $50,000 is a TIF eligible for this project. And once you sign that and those are expended, you can't then add more. Next, safety improvements. Three-quarters have a safety component, which is probably not all that surprising, because really, if you're building, you need to take into account safety. It might address lack of sidewalks. We've gone through a lot of building in Ferndale over the years where sidewalks weren't important, sidewalks weren't necessary, and now we're needing to close those gaps. To promote pedestrian mobility, where that might be anything from the truncated domes that you see at the intersections, might not be ADA appropriate. Even though they might have been okay 15, 20 years ago, they're not now. Corrects illegal traffic patterns. Great example of that is on Washington Street, where we're going to be doing an improvement. Anyone that's driven on Washington knows that while it's two lanes of travel, people make it four lanes of travel when they want to get by the guy turning left, or to take a right on Third when there's a train stopping. We're correcting those to prevent those illegal traffic patterns. Also to adjust visibility and and other things like that. Here, existing deficiencies, it is so tempting to say to a developer or to ourselves, hey, we know that development's going to occur on this road, so let's hold off on making improvements because this applicant's going to come in and they're going to need to fix it for us. That's not actually true. It's our responsibility to correct those existing deficiencies. So that can be the quality of the roadway, the capacity. Existing problems aren't traffic impact fee eligible. So the argument is, but they're just going to make it worse. And that's true. And so we do have the ability to require that they do their share of improvements. It also enables us where if we have a road like, an underutilized road, La Bounty, let's say, and the JL comes in, and they say, well, it's already doesn't meet your standards. And we'd say, well, that's true. But by you adding all this traffic on there, or the Meadows as an example, by you adding all this traffic on there, you're going to destroy the road. You're going to improve the road, and there's likely cost sharing involved in that. But it does vary by project, and that's where Kevin comes in and, you know, really says, hey, we're not going to make you do 100%, but you're not going to do 0% of it. Road standards and preservation. So a third of the projects are maintenance related. And here we're saying, oops, let me go back really quick. A third of them are maintenance related. Main thing, and I don't remember if I get to this later, but I should.
There we go.
That's what it was supposed to say. So, failure to fund programs adequately for maintenance means that we're making either the conscious or the inadvertent choice to delay the improvements, where if there is a road that is fairly heavily used, we might find that we're needing to do a larger capital improvement rather than just, you know, fixing this pothole here or that pothole there. So on Main Street, that is an example where we went and we reground it, and that was more of a preservation action. Whereas up at Thornton in front of Skyline, it hadn't been maintained for many years, and we ended up having to do a more complete improvement there. So it is a choice where do you have a larger maintenance fund to be able to go and take care of these proactively, and maybe spending more on things that might not demand the attention right now, or do you delay it and possibly risk that at some point something's going to start to fail? And that's going to be something, again, that the council makes that decision as far as how much they're going to fund maintenance, because we know that there's not enough money to fund everything, so it's a tough choice. One of the possible goals that you might consider is reducing the number and cost of standards and preservation projects. So maybe by looking at the projects that Kevin is going to present and seeing, gosh, you know, if we had funded our maintenance to the level that maybe maintenance thinks that it should be funded, we probably wouldn't need to do this $1 million project. All right, you know, over a 20-year time, that equates to $50,000 a year. Maybe it starts to make sense. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's a risk that we're willing to take, and it doesn't come up all that often. Next, area circulation. So about a third of the projected transportation projects are area circulation projects. So what does that mean? It means that, as we said, that there is a network that we're talking about, and while you might see congestion at this intersection, by looking at area of circulation, there might be a project where if only you were to do this other project, it would cure the congestion over here. Thornton is a great example, as we've been talking about it. We're putting Thornton in is going to be a safety valve for Washington and to a certain extent Main Street as well. There are a couple of other projects that we're looking at that by adding a new road or by putting in a new kind of circulation, we're going to improve elsewhere in the city. Again, there's only a third of them, but they are high in cost. And ultimately, it's interesting that the projects that we think about are often the area circulation projects, even though they're small in number. So we have 39 projects and programs. 8 of them involve area circulation, but they are those headline projects. Thornton, we talk about, to a certain extent, we've talked about having the parallel road to Main Street through Hagen's and then ultimately to La Bounty. So these are the ones that get the community really excited, and often it's what they associate with transportation and our entire project list. Is it Thornton, or is this other great, sexy project? And we need to remember that we have 31 projects that are less sexy but might be in some ways more important. That's really it, believe it or not, for my presentation. Again, Kevin is going to be talking about what the projects are during regular session. He's going to talk a little bit about what each project seeks to accomplish with a planning level cost, where in some cases we're 20 years out from a project and the numbers that we have right now aren't going to be the numbers it would take to actually build it. And then we can talk a little bit more about what we can do to bring those costs down. And it might be combining projects together. It might be the old adage is the cheapest that a project is going to be is if you built it yesterday. And that's going to be true here, too. So, questions?
Council, questions of Mr. Burnett?
Why did we come at 5? Seriously, I mean, because now we have 45 minutes, and there's a lot going on. We could have done this in regular session. Not to put you on the spot here, but in the future, if you only have a 15-minute presentation, there's no reason to have us come an hour early.
True.
Because I flew from, I was zooming from Eugene to get here by 5. And you did it. And I did it. But.
Any other questions from the council? Thank you, Councilmember Watson. Okay. Do you want to start any of Kevin's presentation? Would you prefer Wade? Because it's not scheduled either way. This is transportation, too. You certainly could.
I'd hate to get into the project list. That was,
okay.
People were.
It's up to you.
To come, but I'm welcome. I'm at the council's bidding. So
yeah.
I can dive into it. We can have a further discussion during the session.
Councilmember Goodrich.
I have a possible project question or something that came to my mind when you said Thorpe. If we don't do something with the northbound 5 off-ramp, that portal, having Thornton overcrossing is going to be a nightmare because, people can't get off of there. And I know that's not part of the, I don't think it's part of the project, but even now it's sometimes hard to get off.
Yeah.
When you're northbound 5
at Portal. We're looking at a compact roundabout there.
I know, but can we put stop signs there on Portal on either side? Because I went up, getting off at Birch Linden the other day, there was a couple of cars, and it was just, okay, one car, cars, and it made it so easy to get off there compared to what it had been in the past when there wasn't the stop signs on the Birch Linden side of it.
I thought Washington had already agreed to.
I mean, we haven't, to my knowledge, I haven't been involved in any analysis of what putting stop signs there would be, but with the proximity of the roundabout that's at 2nd Street, I'd be kind of a little bit on the cautious side about envisioning that working, because especially when you get to the PM peak hour and you're looking at how many cars are getting off there, and you'd be queuing traffic up into the roundabout, and as soon as you queue traffic into the roundabout, then you can no longer process cars off the off-ramp. That we're currently working towards looking at a compact roundabout. We've been in discussion with WashDOT about a compact roundabout at that location. One of the projects that's within the 20-year list is a full roundabout that would mirror the one on the west side of the freeway at that location. So those are all projects that need to be queued up in conjunction with the Thornton project. And, I think as everybody can appreciate, you looking at the Thornton project and the track that it's taken, until a month ago or so, it was this, very expensive project with no funding source and, an uncertain timeline somewhere out on the horizon that we're not looking towards, a date of start of construction. But now with of the Connecting Washington money coming into our jurisdiction, it looks like, you know, it's a real possibility that we can move into construction in the near term, which cues up and changes the assumptions that were used for other projects within the list. And like Yuri had talked about, you know, the planning and the planning horizon and looking at it, if not for this project, we don't need to do this project. So it's much the same with the development. If we don't have a big retailer coming in at Nordic, then we change the timing of the roundabout at LaBounty. Still going to need it, but changes the timing. With the roundabout at Portal, Thornton changes the timing of that project. So in some respects, you're responding to the events that take place and trying to plan for the long term at the same time.
I was just thinking of some of the short term things that would help people getting off the freeway there at Portal, because I don't go that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried it, and I'm sitting there waiting for cars and waiting for my turn to sometimes, to, you know, the cars queuing back up onto the freeway ramp there just because the Portal guys are going back and forth and they don't stop. And so it's kind of like, well, why should I even bother going that way at
right.
times? And so I thought when I saw that at Grandview a couple of weeks ago, how they have stop signs on either side of the off-ramp, and just made getting off the freeway so much easier. You didn't have to worry about the cross traffic mm-hmm. not stopping. And yeah, a mini roundabout or a full roundabout and stuff like that would be great, but those are all way down.
8 years from now.
Yeah,
well, I think
down the road.
I think the compact roundabout.
I mean, we're trying to get people to go that way, especially after we do Washington.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess I missed them. Because I thought Greg had been talking to WashDOT this year about building them.
We've been having discussions with WashDOT. We got an initial response back from them that they were supportive of it, but they wouldn't be doing the design and construction, but were supportive of us doing it. They've taken it, they've passed it through their through their internal group and have discussed it. And then I have a PDF of the overlay of the roundabouts that are at Pacific and at Slater are, there's an 80-foot and a 90-foot roundabout that's out there, and we've superimposed both of those over the intersection. The 90-foot appears to be the preferred alternative due to the sizing of truck traffic and circulation that's going to be there. And it really, it's not a big impact to that intersection or expansion to that intersection. So it's conceivable that we can do the larger of the compact roundabouts there and move forward on a short time frame with that. So it's not an 8 or 10 year project. It's a, you know, in the next year.
Yeah, it probably will happen. And one of the challenges is the footprint itself. The larger the footprint, then you have to start mitigating storm and everything else. If you can use the existing footprint, smaller compact, then you can pop that thing pretty quickly. Mr. Burnett?
Well, one of the things that Washington we haven't, or I'm sorry, that this roundabout we haven't seen yet, but since development is occurring all throughout the city and we have a lot of different projects that will ultimately require right-of-way, what we're starting to see in some cases is when development gets ahead of our design, we know that we're going to need extra right-of-way, but we don't know precisely how much because we haven't authorized any pre-design. So what we'd love to be able to do is when a developer comes in to say, we're going to need 10 feet of your property and you're going to get traffic impact fee credits against it where they would typically like it. But if we don't know if it's 10 feet or if it's 20 feet, it puts us in a difficult position. So the example here for the roundabout is across the way, if you're coming on the northbound exit and there's an old gas station there, you still see the gas station signs. Once we determine where we're going to need that two-lane roundabout, the permanent solution, if it's right there, we're probably going to need property. So as it becomes more active sales listing, we've started to have people come in for the first time asking about it, and they're saying, well, what can we build here? And we can go with what the zone says, hey, build this, do this, develop your site. But we know that if we do that, we're adding another several hundred thousand dollars to acquire it. But we can't really say donate 15 feet or do credits on 15 feet. And there's no real solution aside from developing it now
yeah.
or designing it.
I mean, it puts us in a, you know, a tough situation because we can't go out and design every project that's on the 20-year list and then have this, you know, wish list of things. It's, you know, Portal Way, for example, one of the projects that's on here is going out and doing a full widening project out Portal Way. We have applicants that are coming in on a regular basis that are looking to do projects in the Porto area, and how do we design those frontage improvements that are going up Porto Way so that we're including the curb gutter and sidewalk when they come in to do their project and get those in place, but we don't have a consistent design from one end of the road to the other. So
Well, it's not just a matter of, okay, let's give us the time to design these projects because we don't have the money to design them. So it is really 22, and we can't, you know, necessarily say, hey, Portal's not going to get developed until we come up with this, because then again we won't have the money to do it. It's difficult.
That's juggling a lot of plates. Thank you, gentlemen. Any more
so
questions?
So three-way stop sign wouldn't temporarily fix the situation at all?
Isn't it WashDOT's intersection?
It is. It's better than WashDOT.
It's tougher to get a roundabout.
We could look at it. I'm fairly certain that it won't work with the proximity to the roundabout. But without analyzing it, I don't. No, I can't give you a definitive.
We can ask.
I don't. Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't know exactly what the traffic.
The situation at Groundview, there isn't a roundabout. There's two basically two ramps on both sides. It's a little different.
And the problem is that when you lead back traffic up into a roundabout, then nobody gets out of the roundabout. So then you're just stuck. So it doesn't lend itself well to having the traffic queued into the roundabout.
Thank you. More questions? So staff? Fine. We'll adjourn the meeting till our full meeting at 6 o'clock. You have time to get that pizza, perhaps. Works out well for our swearing of our scope officers. So we'll take a break.